Now, with the latest from the world of technology, this is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenwick.
I quite like the number of apps that are already available.
Tech Guide.
The iPad 2 still beats just about everything on the market. The new iPad has just kicked away even further.
Tech Guide.
I quite enjoyed using it. Great design. The operating system worked hand in hand with the hardware as well.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is the Tech Guide Podcast.
This is obviously a hot-selling device.
Tech Guide.
You know, we want them to be light. We want them to be portable. And this one's very fast with i7 and i5 processors.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenwick.
Welcome to a special edition of the Tech Guide Podcast, Episode 11. Thanks for listening and thanks for downloading. We're really glad you can join us. I'm Stephen Fenwick, editor of consumer technology website techguide.com.au. Now, the feature of this week's show is our exclusive interview with Doug Pitt, brother of superstar Brad and star of the Virgin Mobile Fair Go Bro campaign. But before we get to that, there's plenty of news around too, starting off with even more rumors around a smaller iPad. We'll also have a look at and talk about Apple's $1 billion court victory over Samsung, and the government's decision to do something about those high mobile roaming charges. In our reviews, we'll check out the Asus Padfone, which is part tablet and part smartphone, and also run our eye over the Samsung 15-inch Series 9 Ultrabook. And we'll finish off with the Tech Guide Help Desk with this week dedicated, this edition of the Help Desk this week dedicated to telling you what you can and can't do with your mobile phone while you're driving. A lot of confusion out there. We'll hope we'll clear all of that up for you. A lot to get through, so let's get straight into it. Well, the rumors of an iPad mini, a smaller iPad, they just don't seem to go away. The rumors have been around for some time, more than a year. And with the release of other products like the Google Nexus, and other 7-inch tablets, the BlackBerry Playbook last year, that seems to be a very popular segment of the market, the smaller, more manageable, more portable tablet device, and the iPad mini would obviously fit right into that category. Now, the initial thoughts about the iPad mini was that it was going to be released, going to be announced with during a reported Apple media event that's rumored to be taking place on September the 12th. Now, we all know there's a new iPhone due. This was the event that was meant to introduce the new iPhone, and reports are that still will be the case, although it hasn't been confirmed yet by Apple. But news from the last couple of days, pretty reliable news from a very reputable website, All Things D, that's Walt Mossberg's website, is saying that Apple will actually not release or unveil a new iPad during the September 12 iPhone event, but rather hold off a month and give the iPad mini its own event in October. Now, this fits in with many opinions that people have about how Apple's going to handle the strategy with their releases of these products. There's obviously a huge expectation around the iPhone 5, the new iPhone, whatever Apple is actually going to call this new product. And I'd say it's a pretty good bet that Apple will dedicate a September event to the iPhone. I don't think they will want to reduce the message to have another major product like the iPad mini released on the same day. Imagine if there was an iPhone released with an iPad mini. I'd bet my bottom dollar the iPad mini would hog all of the headlines, which is something Apple obviously don't want to happen. They want the iPhone to be released on its own, unveiled, and into the market by the end of September. On last week's show, we've got it on pretty good authority that the Australian telcos are thinking September 28th is going to be the date. So with that in mind, I think Apple will probably run that through, unveil, release the new iPhone before the end of September, or at the very latest, the beginning of October, and then possibly introduce the iPad mini in October. I've written a story on Tech Guide and sort of speculated about what Apple may be thinking here. I wouldn't be surprised either if Apple actually decided to wait, if they didn't have this October event, which I wouldn't be surprised if they waited until March, where the new iPad is usually released. The new iPad was released earlier this year in March. That seems to be the iPad month. So the iPad mini could even be introduced at that time. But they're going to miss out on the pre-Christmas rush. And I'm sure a product like the iPad mini, which everyone's expecting to be very, very reasonably priced, the new iPad itself is pretty good value to begin with. So a smaller 7.85-inch model would be very competitive and go right up against the Kindle Fire, the Google Nexus. Here in Australia, the Google Nexus starts at $249. So if Apple can get anywhere near that price point for their 7-inch device, I'd say Christmas sale is going to be very healthy. But no, we don't know. None of this has been confirmed. We don't know for sure what Apple are going to do. We'll all find out. And as soon as we find out, we'll be telling you. So hold on to your hats. A iPad mini could be coming your way as early as October. Still on Apple, they were dominating the headlines this week. This time, though, it was the result of their huge court case, their patent lawsuit against Samsung. And the jury found very heavily in Apple's favor and, in fact, awarded them more than $1 billion in damages, which was a significant blow against Samsung. Apple have been fighting this battle for some time, and it all centers around alleged design and technology patent infringements, which Apple alleged Samsung crossed ahead of this court case. So I think Apple's original demands for the case as compensation was $2.5 billion. Didn't quite get there, but $1.051 billion, I think, was the final figure that was decided by the jury in the Californian case. There are several other cases running around the world, including one here right in Australia, where Apple are alleging design and tech infringements. Samsung, though, at the start of this case, actually replied with their own countersuit, claiming that Apple had actually infringed on some of its wireless patents to do with wireless technology and wireless phone technology, so radio technology as well. But unfortunately for Samsung, the result went Apple's way. A lot of commentators are saying that this is the worst possible outcome that Samsung could have wished for. The best case scenario for Apple, of course. But I've been reading a few interesting interpretations of this judgment. While $1 billion for a company the size of Samsung is a massive amount of money, but something that they obviously have plenty, their revenues generated this year can easily cover that amount of money. But there have been some interpretations that this loss in the court is actually not a bad thing for Samsung. One blogger commented saying that if Samsung's products are so close to Apple's products in terms of design and technology, in this case, the judge found that Samsung had copied some of Apple's designs. But this blogger commented that if these are so close to the Apple products, then Samsung could possibly benefit, because bringing these two products closer together would highlight the fact that the Samsung products, while similar, are also much cheaper. There were people comparing MacBook Airs with the Series 9, Series 5, Series 7 laptops, and noticing the huge price difference between the much cheaper Samsung products and the more expensive Apple products. We're actually going to talk about the Series 9 15-inch later in the program. But that's putting a very, very positive spin on the outcome. But still, $1 billion, nothing to sneeze at. It's certainly a huge victory for Apple, and one where Samsung will have to go back and rethink a few things. But also the case also highlights the possibility and sets the groundwork for Apple to possibly even pursue other manufacturers who produce similar products to Samsung, Android powered smartphones and tablets. So I don't think we've heard the last of this court case. The lawyers are certainly rubbing their hands together, especially with results like $1 billion in damages being handed down. So keep an eye on this one. I don't think we've heard the last. These court cases, you're going to see a lot more, including the one here in Australia, where we should have a result sometime soon. But Samsung, $1 billion poorer, Apple, $1 billion richer. And if you want to read a little bit more and even check out some of the evidence that was presented in the case, head over to techguide.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Now, mobile roaming charges have always been a bugbear for travellers, whether you're travelling over to New Zealand or over to the US or Europe. And there's been many a case where travellers have come home and experienced quite a bit of bill shock. And I'm talking bills in the tens of thousands of dollars, where travellers haven't realised the cost of data, using data on the go in other countries. Now, roaming charges are basically you using another, say you're an Optus or Telstra customer here in Australia, your roaming charges is you kind of renting the use of their network in another country. Now, the pricing on these has been high for such a long time that the government has actually decided to step in. And late last week, the Australian and New Zealand governments actually came together and put their heads together to see if they can take some action, put together a report, present it to telecommunications companies to see if anything can be done about charging these excessive mobile roaming charges. Now, they've created a draft report and with a few suggestions to help reduce these high mobile roaming charges. Now, initially, this is obviously an agreement between Australia and New Zealand. They're trying to make it easier for their citizens to travel to Australia and New Zealand and vice versa and not be slugged with these charges. And Senator Stephen Conroy, who's the Minister for Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy, he admitted that, look, it's only a small step that trying to create this network between Australia and New Zealand to reduce these roaming charges is a first step in a much larger job of taking this to the rest of the world, to the US and also to Europe and also across Asia. Some of the suggestions they made was encouraging telecommunications companies to improve price transparency. Know exactly how much you're up for if you want to download a megabyte of data or send SMSs. So make the pricing a lot more easier to work out if you do in fact have to use your mobile phone using data overseas. And also suggested allowing travelers to become local users on their local networks. I think this is something that the telcos are really going to have to look at, because they're the ones who set the charges. They're the ones who make these arrangements with these foreign networks and where the roaming charges are determined. Now, if you are, the old story is, if you're using your mobile in another country, your calls and all the data you use, they've got to go all the way back to Australia and back again, and hence the reason for those really high charges. So this is something that is a real problem. Good to see the government is stepping in. There is a full report on techguide.com.au. If you want to take a look at it, if you've actually been slugged with a huge bill, we'd love to hear from you. I'm interested in writing a story about this and the plight of travellers who just for simply using their mobile phone in another country have come home to bills that are literally thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of dollars. But if you want to read that report, it's at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide Now, a Tech Guide review with Stephen Fenwick.
We've got a couple of products to review this week. The first being the ASUS PadPhone. Now, as its name suggests, the PadPhone is both a tablet and a smartphone. This is a product that's only been out a little while, and I had my hands on it earlier this week and posted my review on Tech Guide on Monday. And it is, to describe the product, it's a $999 product, and it is a tablet and a smartphone. Now, the smartphone is a 4.3-inch device running Android 4.0, so the latest operating system, and it looks like every other smartphone, Android smartphone on the market. It's actually quite thin. It's only 9.2 millimeters thick. It's got an 8-megapixel camera with a flash. It takes decent photos. But the thing with this device is that it comes with a tablet dock. Now, at first glance, the tablet looks like any other 10.1-inch Android tablet on the market, but with one major difference. On the back of this tablet is a flap that opens up. You slide over a switch, the flap pops open, just like the boot of a car. And the ASUS smartphone can then slide inside, connect to the larger screen of the tablet. Once you shut that lid again, this 10.1-inch screen comes to life, and the smartphone is no longer being seen on a 4.3-inch screen. It comes to life on a 10.1-inch screen. Now, the basics behind that is that the smartphone part of the product is actually the brains of the product. It is the CPU, the central processing unit. It is the memory. It is also the 3G connection. It's also the wireless connection. So there's no need to have a separate data account to connect your tablet outside of Wi-Fi areas, as is the case with other tablets where you need a micro SIM, a 3G SIM to connect outside of these Wi-Fi networks. There are other ways you can use your mobile as a hotspot, but in this case, the smartphone, the Asus smartphone, when it's inside the pad phone, the tablet portion of the pad phone, it powers the device. So things like your emails you can view on a larger screen. You can browse the web, play games, and you can even make phone calls. Now the really interesting thing too is in tablet mode, you can still make and receive phone calls. People are saying, well, how do I do that? It's a 10.1-inch tablet. I'm not going to be holding this to my face. Well, one thing, another accessory that comes with the Asus Pad phone is a stylus. Now, at first glance, the Bluetooth stylus, yes, it has Bluetooth, looks like a pen and looks like any other stylus that you'd use with a tablet device. And as I said, it looks like a pen, but at closer inspection, there is actually a small speaker and a small microphone, so you can actually use the pen when it's linked to the Pad phone via Bluetooth as a Bluetooth headset. You can actually hold it to your ear like a mini telephone. So you can decide whether you want to look silly holding a tablet to your ear or holding the Asus Bluetooth stylus to your ear. I'd go for the stylus. People are going to think you're talking into a pen, but you can still make and receive calls. Now, under the hood, the Asus Pad phone has a 1.5 gigahertz fourth generation processor, a Qualcomm fourth generation processor. It's also got a graphics processor, and it's got what they call dynamic display, so that with your screen, the 4.3-inch screen is then upscaled to the 10.1-inch environment in tablet mode. Now, there are several advantages to having this type of product. First being that there's no need to sync data between the two products because essentially you're only using one product. The smartphone is the product that runs the show. So all the data on your smartphone is shown on the larger screen, which is kind of like a monitor I mentioned in my review. It's like a monitor for your smartphone, brings it up to a bigger screen. So there's no need to, all the data on the smartphone is the same data you can have all the time and view on the tablet, but it's all contained within the memory. Speaking of memory, it's got a 32 gig internal memory. It's also got a micro SD card slot, so you can expand that memory even further. Priced at $999. So if you're looking for a tablet and a smartphone solution, this is pretty economical because you're getting kind of two products in one. The only downside is that once you take the smartphone out of the tablet doesn't work. It's like taking the brains out of the tablet. You can't, I mentioned in my review, you can't be talking on your smartphone and hand off the tablet to your child maybe to play a game. It won't work without the smartphone inside. That's the only downside. If you wanted to buy a tablet and smartphone separately, you're going to be paying a lot more than $999, and then you're going to have to sync data between the two products. So the Asus Pad phone has more advantages than disadvantages, in my opinion. You can read my full review, though, if you head over to techguide.com.au. Now, we mentioned earlier in the program about Samsung and their huge loss in the case against Apple earlier. But I just on Samsung, I also reviewed their Series 9 15-inch Ultrabook. Now, this is probably, if you're after an ultra-thin, ultra-light Windows laptop, as I said in my review on Tech Guide, this is probably the pick of the bunch. Now, it's a 15-inch screen. And it's only 14.9 millimeters thick, or millimeters thin, I should say. It's also quite light, 1.65 kilograms. Now, what I liked about this, the design is a real eye catcher. The 15-inch screen, the hinge actually fits into the base. I described it in my review. It's like fitting in with a jigsaw. So the hinge doesn't actually add any thickness to the product. So the engineers over at Samsung have done a great job keeping this very thin, very light. Without the only thing that they've given up is the optical drive, which all Ultrabooks have. But they've still managed to keep two USB 3 ports, a USB 2 port, mini HDMI, a VGA port, and VGA port as well, I mentioned, DC power in, and they all fit within the thickest part of the base, which isn't thick at all. It's remarkable how thin this product is. There's also an SD card slot that's cleverly hidden in the downward slope of the base. So if you really need to check that it's there. It's very hard to miss, but very cleverly hidden in the design of the product. Now, the Samsung Series 9 15-inch Ultrabook. While it may look really attractive, but it's also got it where it counts in terms of speed and performance. It's got an Intel Core i7 1.9 gigahertz processor, and it's very fast. Starts up and is ready to go within 30 seconds. Even when it's in sleep mode, simple tap of one of the buttons, it almost instantly wakes up and it's ready to go again. Now, the beauty of this processor too is that apart from it giving great speed, it's also a low voltage processor, so it's a lot more friendly on the battery. It's not going to drain the battery too quickly. With a 15-inch screen too, you're going to be wanting to do maybe some work, some graphics work, maybe some video editing. You may even want to watch a movie on the screen. So on the graphics side, Samsung have also included an Intel HD Graphics 4000 processor so that the video and image display is really smooth and really nice. The trackpad, pretty large trackpad, so it supports multi-touch gestures, of course. So that's easy to make those multi-touch gestures. There is no defined left and right button also on the trackpad. So we found it a little sticky trying to, the front part of the trackpad was actually a button. So trying to click left and right, we were often too far on the right to execute a left click. But this took a little bit of getting used to. The only thing that really stuck with the trackpad, but wasn't long before we were clicking away left and right as we should have been. Full reviews on Tech Guide, Samsung Series 9 15-inch. I've given it 4.5 stars out of 5. I like it. It's the model number is the NP900X4C, priced at $1,899. That's recommended retail price. You may do a bit better in store, maybe as low as $1,600 if you're lucky. But check out my full review at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide. Now, a Tech Guide interview.
Now, this week's Tech Guide interview is a special one. It's with the star of the Virgin Mobile Fair Go Bro campaign, Doug Pitt, the younger brother of Hollywood superstar Brad Pitt. He's been the star of this campaign, telling customers that if they can make him feel like a star, they can make you feel like a star as well. A very, very clever campaign from Virgin Mobile Australia, I might add. This is an Australian-only campaign that's actually made headlines around the world. There's been stories in Entertainment Weekly in the US. I think the Daily Mail even did a piece about Doug Pitt, and he's the brother of Brad Pitt, and his new life as a mobile phone spokesperson. He's become a real multimedia sensation. His ads have gone viral on YouTube. His TV ads are quite humorous as well, playing on the fact that he's not quite the cool Hollywood superstar that his brother is, but he knows a good deal when he sees one. Well, he visited Australia last week, and we got a chance to catch up with him.
Hi, Doug. Welcome to Australia.
Thanks for having me.
So how's it feel to be a multimedia international sensation?
I'm getting carted around. I get to see the city. I'm eating great food, meeting great people. Pretty great so far.
The campaign with Virgin Mobile has been a great success. Tell us, how did it initially start? Who contacted you? Take us through that.
Well, Virgin contacted me just out of the blue. And, you know, we talked back and forth for probably a good month before I agreed to do it. Originally, you know, I was intrigued by just Virgin, the brand. You know, these guys are good. They're on their game. Usually a little, you know, a little edgy and out there, and I thought this campaign was funny. All the ideas I thought were really funny. But it's really more about me just kind of being insecure. Could I do this? And, you know, just after talking to him, I thought, you know, why not? Let's try it.
Well, the campaign obviously swings on the fact that you're Brad's brother.
Right.
So did you speak to him about it? Are you guys close? Tell us about your relationship.
Yeah, once I finally agreed to do it, I did call him and just said, okay, here's the idea, here's what I'm thinking, and he thought it was funny too, and he's like, hey, go for it, sounds good.
So the campaign obviously involves a fair bit of acting on your part, a few ads, so did your brother offer any acting advice?
No, he didn't, and kind of wish he would have. It was intimidating. You're there in a room. There's 20 people who are working for a living, doing their jobs, and cables and lights, and they say action. All of a sudden, everybody's staring at you like, "All right, go." And so early on, I had to tell him afterwards, "Man, big props. This thing's hard. It's a lot harder than I expected." But they made it easy for me, and the good thing is you can take a take or two if you mess up. So. It was a great experience, really fun.
And the ads actually reflect a little bit about yourself. I think you take people on tour of your house. You actually have a man cave. You've got children and you're the whole family life. So you were kind of playing yourself anyway. Did that help it?
Well, we took a lot of liberties. It wasn't my house and usually don't dress like that too much. So, but again, it was part of the fun. But yeah, I do have a man room. I do have a family, kids, and all that. So wasn't too far, big of a stretch.
Well, tell us, you bear a striking resemblance to your brother, obviously. What's it like to be Brad Pitt's brother? Have people mistaken you for him in public?
Not mistaken, per se. You know, we look alike, but not that much alike. And so it's kind of been later, since I was really into my 40s, that I had some people saying something out of the blue. But usually it's when they see I'm paying with a credit card, they see the name, they look at the card, look at me, look at the card, look at me. And early on it was other people, but not Brad, so...
Okay. And so, obviously, your brother's a huge hit in Hollywood. Hollywood not on your radar? You never had any aspirations for any acting or any kind of career that way?
You know, I just chose the business route. So for 25 years, I've never stepped into any of this. And, you know, that was Brad's domain. And, we've had some offers of this and that over the years. But, you know, it was just a good kind of timing-wise, it made sense. You know, I'm farther enough along in my career than he, and really we're more involved in philanthropic work now. And so I've kind of made my bones there, if you will. And so just for that reason, just the timing worked out. It was good.
And you and your brother, you keep in touch, and you've obviously got a superstar sister-in-law as well. What's the family dynamic like?
It's no different than anybody else. You know, the whole fame thing, we've been dealing with that for years. So, you know, I've got a younger sister, Brad, mom, dad, it doesn't matter. It's family's family, and you connect when you can, and try to work around schedules to get together as much as you can.
And your time here in Australia, obviously you're here as a guest of Virgin Mobile, this hugely successful campaign. Tell us what you've been doing in Australia. You've been making appearances. Run us through that.
We a lot of media, so radio and TV, and we got to open the store happens to be on Pitt Street, so that was fun this morning. We had a little fun opening that store and just playing around Pitt Street today, but... I got to hang out in the harbor a couple of days yesterday. The weather was perfect, and so I've had my tourist hat on while I've been working here as well, and getting to go see Palm Beach tomorrow, and they've really taken great care of me, but it's been great because it's accelerated. They've allowed me to see a lot of Sydney that probably I wouldn't get to see this much of in a shorter time.
And, of course, you got to the world-famous Bondi Beach today, too. Is that right? Tell us about that.
We did, and it was very nice, and I had a great lunch there, and... just part of the whirlwind day.
Now, a lot of people may not be aware, but you actually got quite a tech background, a computer background. You were part owner of a computer service center. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, I've had a computer company for 22 years, and so that's how I eat. We do corporate networking support, and then we do hospitality support around the United States for hotels and in-room support. So tech's been, you know, really all I've known for the last couple of decades.
Can we say that Doug Pitt's a bit of a tech geek?
That's where I got my start, so I got to own it, you bet.
So tell us what it's, your company sets up networks for hotels and events and things like that, so you'd be pretty much aware of on the cutting edge of all the equipment and all the new technology that comes out. Is that right?
We do our best. You know, a lot of that's now so dependent on the engineers. You know, back when we started 22 years ago, one guy could kind of keep his hands around most of it, but today it requires specialization just because there's, you know, within just security, there's so many facets and routing and you know, switch technology. And so it's really very dependent on the individual engineer. Unfortunately, it's a little harder to staff and more expensive to staff, but if you're good at it, there's always work for you.
So you've been involved in the industry for quite a long time, so you must have seen some dramatic changes over the years then.
I think when I started, DOS 3 had just come out, you know, of course no internet, no big box stores or any of that. So, yeah, we've been in it since the early game.
And just with technology today, it's everywhere. So I'm going to ask you a few questions. Are you a PC or a Mac?
You know, I've got a foot in both sides. So at the home, I'm a Mac guy, and about 95% of where I live, our business climate is all PC-based still. So primarily, that's my customers. That's who we service. So, and I'm a big photography guy, and weird enough, I'd rather work on the PC side of my photography than the Mac side, which usually it's flipped around, but that's where I learned it, and now my software, and I just feel more comfortable in that domain.
What about on the smartphone side? Are you a iPhone, Android, or I understand you've just recently got an Android device since you've been in Australia and you've kind of taken to it?
Actually, I do both there as well. So I've got one of each, and just for different reasons. But, you know, I love the gadgets just like any good tech guys. I love to play and learn, and you know, we're never satisfied.
You mentioned you're into your photography. I did know that about you. So how involved are you? Like, what, are you right into obviously staying up to date with the latest gear, and you get out and travel and take photographs? Tell us about it.
You bet. I'm a Canon guy, and you know it is, once you kind of get indoctrinated in the lenses, you're forever stuck. And
you're locked in the system once you do that.
You are. They've got you. But I love the Canon gear, and they've been a good partner to work with on a couple of projects. I'm in Africa a lot with our water projects, and what a canvas Africa is to take pictures. So I've been able to use the photography and to sell them at different shows to raise money for our water wells, and I love it. Absolutely love it.
So what's you got? Have you got pictures hanging in your home, the pictures that you've taken, framed in your house?
Oh, sure, yeah. And we've done a couple of different shows around the United States. And, again, all the proceeds go for our water project. So it's great to use a hobby that you love to raise some money.
Now, I understand that you're obviously involved in charity work, some voluntary work. Mm-hmm. I asked them to send me over your bio, and a three-page document came through all the things you've been involved with. So you're quite active in your community. You reside in Springfield in Missouri.
That's correct.
So just tell us some of the things that you've done in the community and the charity work you've done.
Yeah, I have been involved in a lot of things, but there's two things I've locked in on. I'm the Goodwill Ambassador for Tanzania, and so we've got a water drilling company in Tanzania, 9 drilling rigs. We do probably about 200 water projects a year, so those can be deep water wells or sanitation projects. And then we have 2 drilling rigs coming online in Kenya that'll be dealing with the refugee crisis there. It's just absolutely horrific, and we can't get those online fast enough, so I'm eager to get going there. And then, but in my role as ambassador, I work outside the water space. I may work with companies that want to do business there to make it easier for them, or it could be an NGO on the philanthropic side in the hearing space or malaria or AIDS, and just trying to make it easy. You know, it's Africa's a tough place to do business, and just from a commercial aspect or philanthropic aspect. So we've got to make it easier. You know, a lot of people want to help, but if you make it hard, they'll go elsewhere or just get frustrated and quit. So that's a lot of what I do. In the States, we've got a charity called Care to Learn, and it's really cool. A kid shows up to school with any health, hunger, or hygiene need, and we get it funded. So if they need shoes, food, inclement weather clothing, hygiene, or if they're just, let's say they're getting made fun of because, you know, we have a kid wearing his mom's jeans because that's all he's got, or something like that, it's all completely anonymous. Get the kid off to the side. Let's get those needs taken care of and get them back in the classroom so they can just be a kid. And I'm thrilled to say it's been very well received, and we've filled, I think, now 115,000 requests in a little over 4 years' time.
Well, your brother Brad and his wife Angelina, they're involved in a lot of charity work too. Do you get them involved in some of your projects? Does it help being Brad Pitt's brother in these situations?
No question. The name helps get you in the room. It does. And obviously you've got to keep yourself there, but that's obviously one great, nice benefit that it does at least get people's attention. And you know, now it's up to you to sell the substance of your program and make sure there's a fit. But really, he does his own thing. I've got my own charity work, and even my sister. All three of us have African charities, and none of them are related. So it's just kind of one of those things. You get into it, and something chooses you, and you just kind of throw yourself at it. And luckily, we've all three have the ability and time to do that, and have found something that chose us.
Just getting back to the tech side of things. Now, you did mention you got a man cave, a man room. Yep. What sort of gear have you got in there? What is your, apart from your photography, are you into watching movies? You're an audiophile. Tell us what's in the man room, the man cave, we call it here in Australia.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this is the tech closet that I don't touch because it's all about the theater. And so the whole house is wired into it from a sound standpoint and all the way down to the doorbell that you can change the tone. But when I start playing with the wires, bad things happen in that one. So any good tech guys knows what the specialists work on the audio side. But it's good fun.
Okay. So is audio a big part of it? Have you got a home theater in your house?
Yeah. We've got one of the big 10-foot screens in there and the nice audio package there. So it's kind of a mini theater and a great place for the guys on any sport.
Now, I understand you're a fan of 70s classic rock. Is this a rumor or is this true?
No, we did a lot of, obviously we took a lot of liberties while we were filming the ads, and so a lot of ad-libbing going on, and I love 70s classic rock, so that one, that came from the heart.
Your family making fun of your musical taste, are they?
Oh, they made fun of a lot of things on that ad, so, but absolutely.
Now, with your Virgin Mobile commitments, I understand that there's is there more to come in the near future? Is this a long-term relationship you're developing here, or tell us about that?
No big plans. It's kind of running its course, and we've filmed, think about everything that you've seen, and they've been wonderful to work with, really have, and I've enjoyed the whole process, and you know, I really didn't know what to expect coming into this. They didn't know what to expect from me. They took a great big chance on me, and I think it's worked out for both.
Well, it's been a huge success, and we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today. Enjoy the rest of your stay in Australia.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Now, answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
Now, our Tech Guide Help Desk this week, we've decided to dedicate it to the one subject. Well, we had a bit of a longer than normal interview with our good friend Doug Pitt, so we're only going to limit the Help Desk to one subject this week, and that's all about using your mobile phone in your car. I think everyone knows that it's illegal to use your mobile phone, to hold your mobile phone, or touch your mobile phone while you're driving. Now, there's many misconceptions out there about when you can and can't touch your mobile phone, what you can do on your phone. Obviously, texting while you're driving is absolutely illegal, even though I've seen a few morons driving at high speed trying to type while they're driving. Now, this is just ludicrous, and they deserve the fines they get. It's quite a significant fine and 3 demerit points if you are caught using your mobile phone in the car. But according to the RTA website and other road and traffic authorities around the country, it is illegal to drive or ride a vehicle whilst using a handheld mobile. To that end, obviously you need a Bluetooth headset or a Bluetooth speaker. The headset you can maybe wear in your ear. A lot of phones come with corded headphones, so in-ear headphones that also act as your hands-free set as well. The speakers can be fit on your visor so that you can pair the phone with the device, maybe even answer with a press of a button or even answer with your voice. There's many products that are voice-activated, so you don't even have to touch your phone. Now, one misconception is that when you stop at the traffic lights, that you're allowed to touch your phone. Wrong. You cannot touch your phone even when you're stopped at the lights or in traffic. You need to be parked by the side of the road to be able to use your mobile phone. But what's interesting to me, the website here, the New South Wales Government website, the Roads and Traffic Authority website, has made some suggestions about mobile phone use even if you are using it with a hands-free kit. One of the suggestions is, they said, obviously keep the conversation short. But another interesting suggestion was, don't engage in complex or emotional conversations. In other words, don't have an argument or don't be overly emotional while you're driving, because it's actually going to distract you from the task at hand, which is keeping control of your vehicle. Now, there are other people on the road, other cars on the road. You may be driving past a school. You take your eyes off the road. You may be trying to complete one word in a text message, but your car may have traveled 90 to 100 meters down the road without you seeing where you're going. It could be someone's child that you may be endangering, or any other citizen, any other pedestrian that may be walking across the road, riding their bike, or just in another car. So mobile phone use, guys, really take care. Get that hands-free car kit. It's really not worth the fine, and it's not worth the grief if you have an accident, and God forbid if you hurt someone. So take note of that. Get onto your Bluetooth car kits. Make sure you stay safe behind the wheel. Well, that's our show for another week. I hope you enjoyed it. We want to hear from you too, so send us your emails to info@techguide.com.au, or you can head over to the Tech Guide forum if you'd like your question answered on our Tech Guide help desk. We look forward to your company next time. I'm actually off to Berlin this week for IFA, the European version of the Consumer Electronics Show, and I'll be telling you all about it in next week's episodes. But in the meantime, see you later.